This is Mandy.
And this is Leanne.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths. All right, today we actually have a special guest, my niece Madison.
Hey, Madison.
Hi. she's going to listen in on the story that we have today to tell you guys. And we'll get some of her opinions or, commentary. Maybe she can help us sleuth this mystery.
Yeah.
Solve this mystery. Okay, this is episode
12.
Yeah, episode 12. And today I'm going to tell the story of the disappearance of Malaysia Flight 370. All right.
You looked excited, Madison.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I never really looked into it.
You haven't looked into the details? Because today you're going to find out the details, and then we can tell the theories that we think we can talk about it and try to solve it, you know, or sleuthing it out. Okay. This would become one of the biggest mysteries in aviation history, and I'm about to tell the story. Y'all ready?
Go ahead.
All right. On March 8, 2014, at 12:42 a.m., Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 took off from Kuala Lumpur, I think I said that right, the capital of Malaysia. It was heading for a routine flight that happens about twice a day to Beijing, China. So it's just like a normal, you know, 5 hours, 34-minute flight. So first officer, he was a 27-year-old Farik Hamid, and this was a training flight for him. He had about 2,000 hours, and this flight was actually going to make him, like, official, you know, after this flight. So he was being trained by a seasoned captain, Zahari Ahmed Shah. Said that right? Mm-hmm. I may have butchered it. He was 53 years old, and he had been with Malaysia Airlines since the 1980s. So he was, you know, knew what he was doing. He had over 18,000 hours of flying. And there was 10 flight attendants and 227 passengers on board, most Chinese, but 38 were from different countries, even 3 Americans. Fali, that was the 27-year-old pilot. He was the one that, you know, was really flying, and Zahari was handling the radio that night. So everything was normal at first. I mean, you know, the flight took off, everything seemed normal, but Zahari's transmissions were a little bit unusual. At 1:01 a.m., he radioed that he had leveled off at 35,000 feet. Usually, you radio leaving an altitude, not arriving at one, which...
Because I figure no news is good news, you're doing what you're supposed to do, everything.
Yeah, and if you change altitude, you know, you let them know because you want to make sure there's nobody en route so you don't crash your plane to someone else in that altitude, you know. So, because, I mean, they can see you, but I guess they can't always see what altitude you are on radar. So, at 1:08, the flight crossed over the Malaysian coastline, and the Zahari again radioed the plane that it was at 35,000 feet, which that's all he said. Still sort of strange. And then 11 minutes later, the airline gets close to the Vietnamese traffic air control. They control, when they see you coming in, you know, they radioed flight MH370 and said, you know, this is the frequency to use, and this is who you need to radio.
You're leaving us. This is where you're about to be.
Yes. Then Captain Zahari radios back, Malaysia 370, good night. That's all he said. Okay. So that was the last time anybody, he didn't read back the frequency like they had told him. Obviously, he got it, but he didn't read it back. So that was the last time anybody heard from flight MH370. Okay. So radio control, they tried to radio them, of course, and everything several times, and everything came unanswered. So when, you know, when they crossed over from Malaysia to Vietnam, that's kind of when everything went silent. So both of them, I think it was just a miscommunication, and Vietnam thought that Malaysia had them, and Malaysia thought they were in, you know. That's what they say anyway. Really, it should have been when they didn't cross over like they were supposed to, and all of a sudden,
Vietnam,
you know, they disappeared.
Kind of dropped the ball on that. I mean, Malaysia let them go. Vietnam sort of dropped it.
Yeah, and they should have reported it early on.
They're not here yet.
Yes, and they didn't. So when they were in that airspace, which they were in Vietnam's airspace, they disappeared from radar, and it had been reported that somebody had turned off from the plane. They turned off the transponder. And or it failed. So that was the only reason you'd be disappeared from radar. That's all they know, basically, that happened. Is it disappeared from radar, and it didn't land in China at 6:32 like it was supposed to.
Because I'm assuming that Malaysia talked to Vietnam and said, hey, these people are leaving. They didn't just talk to the plane, like talk to the people in Vietnam and said they're about to
I think they actually
They all have a flight plan, right?
They have a flight route.
Yeah, they have like a flight plan.
And I don't really think they talk to each other until... No, I don't think they talk to each other. I think they just... Yeah, they just let them off.
Vietnam knew they were coming. Like, they were scheduled. They knew they were coming.
And he did answer at first, remember? He just said...
to Vietnam or Malaysia.
Yes, he answered to Vietnam. They were landing in China.
Yeah.
But he's crossing over.
Flying over Vietnam?
Yeah, it's a fact. Well, they are supposed to. So what happens is Vietnam says, okay, this is... You know, who you're supposed to correspond with, and this is the frequency.
Oh, Vietnam said that, not Malaysia.
They said
that. Oh, I thought Malaysia gave them a heads up. Like, you're about to cross over, and this is who you need to talk to in Vietnam.
Vietnam said that. And so, because they were leaving Malaysia, so they were going into Vietnam. And so Vietnam said that, which they, you know, they heard, they did answer. And after he had said the 35,000 feet, he did answer, and he just said the flight number, and he said, good night. That's all.
So maybe Vietnam didn't have a real reason to suspect anything if they heard from him. They're like, oh, he's here.
They did hear from him at first, but he did, you know, they did disappear from radar. And they said he was trafficking other people, whoever. Yeah. So that person is who kind of dropped the bomb. But they didn't, they just said, you know, they got preoccupied looking at other things. So nobody was really alarmed until 6:32 a.m. when they were supposed to, about the time they were supposed to land in China.
5 hours later.
Yes. And so obviously where the plane could have been by then. Yeah, they started a search in the South China Sea, which was the route that they should have taken. You know, that, that route, the planned route, right? And so, of course, they didn't find anything. I mean, they, you know, put out distress or whatever for everybody, ships, planes, everybody go looking for them, and they never found anything. That was what they did write it. But obviously, they're looking in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. So the Malaysian military was able to track where they had actually gone. From pings, I mean, it took them a little while to investigate and the data and everything, which they had taken right about the time they crossed the different airways. They took a sharp left, and that's when they were, it said that they were shown crossing over the Malay Peninsula, and the, if I say this right, Andaman Sea?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. And they flew over the Indian Ocean for a while. Okay, that's what the ping showed, and they actually flew for 7 hours in the wrong direction, and then they noticed one more turn where the plane tried to turn back to Malaysia. Yeah.
This almost happened.
But it was still, it was still over the Indian Ocean at this time. They think it actually, they got pings till 8:30 in the morning. But, you know, if they would have known in time that this was off the path, they may have been able to do better tracking.
Yeah.
But they just didn't even know they were missing till 6:32 in the morning, right? Till they were supposed
to
land.
Too much has happened by then.
Yeah, and the family's there, everybody's there, and they're like, oh, they didn't land. And then they start checking the back flight, you know, records, and they have to contact Malaysian military, and that's when they figure out that they flew for that long and that what their flight pattern probably was. Because, you know, you got to think everything was turned off in the plane. All their radar was turned off. Somebody deliberately turned off. It was two different things that was that were turned off that makes it where you can track the plane and you can track all the details. Well, all that was turned off, and obviously it was turned off deliberately. By who or why or what, we don't know. Or, you know, if the plane had caught fire or something, those things could have been off. Well, we know it flew for 7 hours more because
of the
pings.
Yeah, so it didn't blow up or anything.
No. They do more searches. Well, they get nothing, obviously, because they're looking in the wrong place. The Malaysian Prime Minister just thinks it must have ran out of fuel. Once they get the new flight path, it must have just ran out of fuel and crashed in the Indian Ocean. The search cost $200 million,
Jeez,
and they came up with nothing. Then in April 2015, a few false positives happened. Australia and China vessels were using underwater listening equipment, and they detected some underwater ultrasound signals that they thought were coming from the plane's black box. And they were like, okay, we're sure we're going to find the plane. Supposedly, they think that they quit hearing it. They thought the batteries ran out or something. Because you've only got so long before the batteries run out on the black box. So you've got to search. You've got to be on it quick, which obviously the search was delayed because they were looking in the wrong place for a while. That didn't turn up anything, which they were pretty upset about. And then on a coastline thousands of miles away, clues finally did begin to wash up. On July 29, 2015, a 6-foot piece of plane debris was found by volunteers cleaning up a beach on the north coast of Reunion. Reunion is an island in the Indian Ocean, and it's a region of France, not far from Madagascar.
Mm-hmm.
So on August 5th, Prime Minister confirmed it was most likely from MH370. It was the first of more than 20 pieces found. They washed up upon the coast of Africa and islands in the Indian Ocean. Then in November 2016, a recovered wing flap from the plane was found. And it was not in the landing.
Sure one, or they don't still pieces they don't know
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, they crashed the flight.
They pretty sure in all of it. You know, they're saying that it definitely did match, but they were like most likely from
mostly.
Yeah. And this one, though, they noticed that this wing flap was not in the landing position. So that theory is that it crashed. I mean, that makes you think that it definitely crashed, that it didn't, they weren't trying to land the plane. Yeah. If the wing was not in the landing position. So it's a mystery and we don't know. And I thought we could talk about some theories of what happened and why it disappeared. And, you know, like I said, they think they found it, but they're not really sure. Hijacking, they were saying that's probably not what happened because no terrorist like ever said, oh, I did this, because, you know, they want to take responsibility for what they did, because that would be the whole point of the murder-suicide, you know, a terrorist attack, things like that, that they would want to take credit for it. The other theory was it was a mechanical error, and they said that the plane had actually just been checked, you know, everything was checked thoroughly, so they don't think that that's what it was on the mechanical error. But the thing that everybody really thinks the most, I guess, reasonable thing is a murder-suicide, that the pilot, the older pilot, not the younger one, because he was actually engaged to get married, and they just felt like he had a lot, you know, and he wasn't as seasoned, so he wasn't as good at being able to do things like turn off the second radar, which they say you really had to know.
He wouldn't have known all those little things.
Yeah, he wouldn't. The younger one. That's what they think. And they did report that he also had a flight simulator. This guy, Sahari, that's all he did was fly planes. Like, that was his life. And I think that his marriage had probably suffered because he was a pilot. They say a lot of pilots, because they're gone all the time. But that they tried to blame him. They said supposedly he was depressed, and that, you know, he was having marriage troubles, and they just thought that maybe it made sense that he did that. But another thing, they said it definitely had to be intentional or unintentional. The cabin had to have been depressurized because none of the passengers, you know, we're talking 270 people, nobody tried to text, nobody tried to call, nothing.
Yeah, no service.
So they didn't know it was even happening.
Yeah, they think that decompressurization had to have happened before anybody thought anything was
suspicious.
Yeah, because we're talking 39 minutes into the flight, things started getting weird.
But then, I mean, when you think about if they took a left turn and flew 5 hours out of the way or whatever, like the passengers may have been just chilling that whole time because they don't know which way a plane's supposed to be going.
I feel like I would know that the plane just like
took a different turn.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe not. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Maybe not the first turn. Well, you definitely know when you're flying hours longer than you're supposed to, but that's why they're saying.
But they didn't.
Well, that's why they're saying. Well, they
flew 5 hours out of the way.
Yeah.
But they didn't fly 5 hours longer than they were supposed to.
Well, they flew 7 hours total, and the flight was only supposed to be 5 hours and 24 minutes.
Right.
So.
But for 5 hours of that, they were probably like.
Oh, yeah. So you don't know when it happened. But it was still. You'd still think if there's Wi-Fi on the plane, people would still be messaging and doing things. So that's why they think it happened pretty early on. Mm-hmm. But that would be a way to kill 270 people pretty easily.
Why, though? If it's just like the older pilot killing the little pilot.
Well, because he didn't want... if he wanted to do a murder-suicide mission, he would have wanted them to be incapacitated, as you know, because he doesn't want anybody to rebel against it. I mean, what if they tried to take him over? I know. There was different conflicting reports. Some people were like, you know, friends and family. He had 3 children that were grown. They were like, he would never do it. And then later on reports, people were like, well, he was depressed. And he was, you know, he would message girls on Facebook and nobody messaged him back. And he would pace a room, an empty room, which I thought that sounded so strange.
Maybe he was just an odd fella.
And he did try a bunch of different, I mean, there was some flight patterns on his simulator. And they were saying that maybe he did one because one, it wasn't finished. And they thought that was odd. And you know, then they said one was the same path that they probably took, but then that was debunked and said that wasn't true. But maybe he was trying to see how much the fuel would last, going like how long, what the flight would be.
He was just crazy. And just ride it out.
But they said if he was really going to take the plane down, he probably would have done it a lot, or he probably wouldn't have flown for 7 hours straight.
Not if he's crazy.
So, well, this is what kind of makes me, this is another theory that I have, that I don't really know if it was a murder-suicide. There's a thing called hypoxia. Okay, and that's what happens when the plane gets decompressurized, you lose pressure.
Oxygen.
You don't have enough oxygen. So those masks that fall down, they only last about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now the pilot, their mask, they've got oxygen for longer. It's at least an hour or a couple hours. So one of the theories is that it happened on accident. Like, even the pilots, you know, they lost pressure in the plane, which the only thing that's odd about that, but it has happened. I read all about this other flight where one of the flight attendants tried to take over the plane because they said how you know is that it's like below 32 degrees and the windows were fogged up. Because usually if a distress happens, okay, they're not getting any radio. Fighter planes, they come and like will try to like figure out what's going on. And they drove up next to this other plane and they saw that like the windows were fogged up. So they knew, I mean, the pilots were incapacitated too. They couldn't fly. They were goners too. And there was one guy and he had been taking flight lessons. He was a, and this, I can't remember the name of the flight, but I mean, you could Google it if I could, I can put it in the notes on the episode because it was really interesting. But he, this poor guy, he was a flight attendant and he was trying to fly the plane and he could see the fire, you know, fire. They were trying to like help him. And I think they said you get really like woozy and you get like really kind of crazy. Yeah. But even like before, you don't even know that you're losing oxygen. Like you get real loopy.
Yeah.
And they said that if the pilot was flying it for hours, and I don't really know if oxygen, he'd have oxygen for 6 hours though. But they said maybe that's why he turned it back towards Malaysia because he was just confused and he was thinking, well, I can land there. Like I've gotten off track, but now I can land there. Like he just was like goofy, like not. They said your brain's not functioning.
But then, you know, there's also the black hole theory.
Well, yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, I like that.
Sorry, I'm just looking a little bit at some of the other, like, random theories. There's a bunch of them out there, like a cyber attack, and the United States hijacked it and made it land somewhere
else. Or that it was shot down. I have heard that. Like, conspiracy theories, things like that.
The black hole one is probably my favorite.
And it's going to appear it's going to appear in 10 years and everybody's going to come back like Manifest.
That's
and
they're what I was all just gonna, thinking about.
And they're
oh
all,
my gosh.
And this was before, maybe that's where they got that show from. Oh, wait, was the show was around that same time, I think, 2014.
Was it?
Manifest. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was like 3 seasons. I mean, I think it was way after that. I don't know.
Into it. Anyway.
I loved Manifest. But I don't really know. I just think the hypoxia was a very interesting theory. Like, okay, well, the passenger's already gone. Well, the pilots, because they know somebody was still flying that plane, at least for a little while. Then guess what? It could have flown itself on autopilot until the gas ran out, and then it just crashed into the Indian Ocean. That's probably the most plausible
explanation. But if it went straight down, wouldn't it have gone to like a bazillion pieces? But they did find a bunch of stuff.
So. They did, but I think what happened is I think they were just looking in the wrong place. The whole time.
I mean, did they not just backtrack? I mean, that's not, I mean, I'm no scientist or whatever, but I just feel like, okay, they were supposed to be in China and they didn't make it. So let's just backtrack through all the places.
But they had no idea that they said that the Indian Ocean, the place where they think it crashed, is the size of Texas.
But didn't they just spent $200 gazillion on it?
And they still haven't found it.
I mean, I would walk the state of Texas for that on foot.
Well,
no. Yeah, I know.
Well, so when I was like doing my research, there's an update. It said an Australian retired aerospace engineer, Richard Godfrey, believes he needs just one more search for MH370.
And say.
I know, like he's been doing some research so and he's pinpointed it down. He said he knows pretty much exactly where it went down, but he is going to get that search from the help of Ocean Infinity. It's a marine robotics. To search the seafloor in 2023.
Yeah. Whatever.
So in 2023, it's only going to cost $30 million more. But in 20,
that's all.
Only $30 million.
So in 2023, they're going to restart the search.
Okay.
So maybe they'll
do a follow up.
Yeah, maybe they'll find the actual plane, and that will be really exciting. So that's all.
Please make sure that you send along any stories that you have that you want us either talk about or any ones that are kind of like weird stories, so we can do another campfire episode because we really like doing that. It was so fun.
Yeah, and we can have a couple
and
guests.
And you'll be anonymous unless you don't want to be. Either way, you have to let us know. But just email us at twoblondesleuths@gmail.com, and please make sure to go on all social media
and like us, and subscribe.
Like us, follow us, subscribe, rate, review on Apple, all of it. Apple Podcasts.
So we can get in the charts. We can get in those charts.
Yeah, top of the charts.
Top of the charts. So thank you for listening to
Tip on Sleuths.